Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Well, guess what the topic is this week? Well, it's got to be the election, but not just the election. Let's sort of speculate about what will be the economic and political consequences of where we are at the moment. So this is an election analysis with consequences, economic and political. All right, let's start with the jobs numbers that just came out today. Okay, 638,000 net new jobs created. The number is going down from week to week and month to month. But the unemployment new initial filing claims is not going down. It's holding steady at about a 1 million a week. We have well over 20 million people still on unemployment benefits, somewhere between 20 and 23 million people still receiving unemployment benefits, even after the extra benefits, the $600, declined or disappeared in August. That's because we have 11 million people who are receiving what are called the special unemployment federal benefits for independent contractors, you know, and people, gig workers, freelancers, and so forth. That runs out at the end of December. And I don't believe they're going to renew it. Anyway, we'll see what happens, and we'll talk about that more when we talk about the stimulus. But the unemployment rate, you know, 6.9%, they said. Well, as I've said many times, that's just the unemployment rate for full-time workers. You have all these part-time temp workers, what's called U-6 instead of U-3, which add to that number. Plus, you have all the people who dropped out of the labor force for various reasons or exhausted their unemployment benefits. I mean, how can you have 6.9% unemployment rate, you know, based on a total civilian labor force of about 160 million, although that's declined some, you know, that's like 10 million people, maybe. 6.9% is 10 million unemployed. Well, we've got 20, 22 million getting benefits. Yeah. How can you have 6.9% and 10 million unemployed when you got 22 million people still getting benefits? And by the way, the number is even higher than 20, 22 million because you have people exhausting their unemployment benefits. They're not in that 22 million. About a million a week are exhausting their benefits now. And you have people who've just given up, dropped out of the labor force. They're not calculated in unemployment rate the way the government does it. And then we have an untold number of people in two paycheck families where one of the parents has had to quit to take care of tutoring their kids, especially if they're K through six, grade six. Well, if you quit, you're not considered unemployed and you're not in the unemployment rate numbers. So this 6.9% is just a fiction. You know, there is at least double, triple, maybe. There's at least still, I would say, 30 million people unemployed, jobless in this country. 30 million. Now, it's very interesting, the composition of that unemployed, because we see employment rising in manufacturing and construction. In fact, it's a weird recession. You know, we've never had a recession where the impact of the joblessness has been in the service sector and not in the goods sector. Goods sector being manufacturing and construction. Never been that kind of a cause effect or correlation. But it is today. It's a recession that's weird in many, many ways. And I'll talk about it more, you know, about the geographic uniqueness and strangeness of this recession, not just the economic sector inversion between the goods sector and the services sector. And not all the service sector is really impacted either, but, you know, mostly travel, entertainment, you know, lodging, restaurants, basic personal services, movies, you know, resorts, theme parks, all those sports events. You know, those are the sectors that are in depression. And other sectors, education as well, I would say. You know, just digress here. This remote education thing is a total bust. I mean, just talk to the parents. You know, especially if the kids are kindergarten through sixth grade. It's impossible. It's driving parents crazy. Okay, so it's a very unique recession, and the jobless nature reflects that strange uniqueness. But the unemployment rate is not 6.9%. Come on. It's about 20% still, although slowly we're seeing more and more of the economy open. Okay. What about the stimulus that was dead here before the election, where we had Pelosi and the Democrats at a $2 trillion package proposal and McConnell at a half trillion, $500 billion. And the compositions were, of course, different as well. And McConnell would not budge, would not move. Both sides would not move, waiting to see what's the outcome of the election here before they moved again. But as I'll explain a little later, I don't think they're going to move still because of the outcome of the election. Right? So no big stimulus coming. You know, McConnell will stay at a half trillion, and Pelosi has no reason to move. If McConnell isn't going to signal he's moving, well, you know, why reduce your proposal if you know your other side is not going to reply? And then we have the unknown. Will Trump leave a scorched earth economic trail behind him here? I don't see him and his negotiator, Mnuchin, actually trying to break the logjam, which they can't anyway, in the Senate, in McConnell's Senate. Right? So what that means is we're not going to see, in my opinion, a stimulus of any kind, before this political situation is rectified, stabilized, clarified. And that's not going to happen, in my view, until December sometime. And then it will be too late. They will wait until the new Congress comes, which means you're not going to get any kind of stimulus until February. And I believe it will be minimal, insufficient, even then. Insufficient before and insufficient after. Big problem for the recovery of the economy, because the signs are now that the fourth quarter is getting significantly weaker. You know, we had the third quarter, as I talked about last week, listen to the show. We had a boost going on in third quarter as the economy reopened and as the tail end of the March-April stimulus, the CARES Act, still had a little momentum, particularly in July. But the CARES Act stimulus totally disappeared here in late third quarter, and now there is no stimulus, which was really pretty much limited to small business grants and loans and full workers unemployment benefits and checks and so forth. But that was significant, over $1 trillion in that. But, you know, it hasn't had much effect in recent months and won't. That's why they really needed a further stimulus in August, September, but we're not getting it for reasons I just explained. And that is a significant factor behind the now weakening of fourth quarter U.S. Economic activity. Not so much in manufacturing construction, but in the rest of the economy, mostly services. Keep in mind, too, manufacturing is less than 12% of the total U.S. economy, and construction maybe another 6-7%. So less than 20% is goods producing, and the rest is all services. And some of those services are in deep depression. And with the winter months, they're not going to come back, even in good times. But now we got COVID. 100,000 new cases. Yeah, and the hospital rate's starting to rise. This thing's going to get much worse. COVID's going to get much worse. Even if they come out before the end of the year with a vaccine, it can't get distributed, and it won't have an effect under the best cases, if it works, until next spring or summer even. So don't count on the COVID impact. And, you know, the COVID impact economically is not simply shutdowns. We're not going to have a general shutdown anymore, but there will be selective shutdowns, particularly in blue states, and that will affect the economy. But it's really the impact on consumer consciousness and consumer expectations, and therefore consumer demand and spending. People will voluntarily, unilaterally reduce their spending as a result of the COVID surge. So no stimulus and a COVID surge with negative economic effects. And then we are on the verge of the big unknown of what will be the political instability here now, next couple months. And how will that impact business expectations and investment and production, and also impact household consumer spending? So we also have growing layoffs in the fourth quarter here, both in state and local government and in certain industries as well, particularly industries that are now realizing they don't have to bring as many workers back. Or, well, this is a good time to take the $650 billion tax cuts for businesses in the March CARES Act and use it to displace workers and, you know, invest in new capital equipment instead of the workers. And big layoffs, permanent layoffs, by big companies everywhere being announced. That will have a negative impact in the next couple months and beyond as well. So no big stimulus. McConnell is going to... you know, wait. He is the key and has been for months now behind the scenes in stopping a stimulus. Right? Maybe Pelosi will try to move the logjam by reducing her proposal from $2 trillion to $1.5 trillion. But I don't think McConnell is going to take that bite. And I think he's going to stay where he is because he's in the driver's seat now with the stimulus negotiations. And he always was. Trump, you know, since August, was out of the picture. This was always the Senate, McConnell's Senate, as the obstacle to a deal here. Trump gave them nice cover, but now we see without the Trump cover where it's really at now, right? So in terms of stimulus, I don't think we're going to see anything before the end of the year. If we do, it will be minimal. Pelosi will have to totally cave in, which could happen. You know, if he caves in, you know, you'll get something like $700 billion maybe, yeah, which is totally insufficient. Or you may get a piecemeal thing now. They may go piecemeal instead of a package now that Pelosi's bargaining leverage is much, much reduced because of the election, which I'll explain. And, you know, you got to keep in mind here, it's worth mentioning, that there is still $620 billion from the March CARES Act that's not been spent. Now, why don't they just spend that? You know? Well, where is that $610? Well, $135 billion of the PPP, Small Business Loan Grant Program, has not been spent. It's still sitting there on the books. And you've got another almost $600 billion in what's called the Main Street Lending Program by the Fed, $600 billion, which hasn't been spent at all. Only like $3.7 billion of that has actually been loaned to businesses out of the mainstream program, which is an indication, you know, if the businesses aren't taking it up, they couldn't be that hard up. You know, I'm talking about medium-sized businesses now. When we talk about businesses and borrowing and the programs, we have to distinguish between small businesses, that's the PPP program, Medium-sized businesses, that's called the Main Street Program, $600 billion there, most of it except $3.7 billion unused. And then you talk about the big corporate program of $500 billion. And you do have some airlines and others that have taken up some of that, but maybe only $50 billion. You know, the number I keep seeing is $484 billion still there. So most of those big loans, the businesses aren't taking up because business is not hard up. It's not hit. As I've said many times on this show, what business has done is issue trillions of new dollars in corporate bonds, raise money that way, drew down their credit lines with the banks, hundreds of billions there, suspended their dividend stock buyback payments, hundreds of billions there. And then you've got the farm sector, an agribusiness, which Trump over the last 18 months has given $70 billion to in grants, $70 billion. You know, as his trade war with China failed, he kept that base going by giving them free money, $70 billion. Well, that kind of explains, you know, why you have, partly at least, why you have the Midwest and the farm sector still voting for Trump. As we'll talk about it shortly, economically, the red states have not been that harmed economically. And we'll explain why. Which explains, in turn, you know, why he still gets, 69 million votes there? It looks like Biden will get about 73, 74 million, you know, 4 million difference in the popular vote, which is irrelevant because we got Electoral College. And as I'll explain shortly, the Electoral College may be irrelevant as well. Hold that. Okay, to summarize economics, where we're at, the stimulus is dead for a while till the political system situation gets clarified. It'll be much reduced if we ever see it. And the jobs numbers are not 6.9% unemployment. Okay. Now, an interesting event occurred this past week, you know, amidst all of the political brouhaha here going on, and that was the Fed. Federal Reserve met, and the Federal Reserve announced, you know, the Fed has been trying desperately to get Congress and the Republican Senate to pass the stimulus bill, because the Fed has kind of shot its wad, you know? The Fed has spent so much on what's called QE, you know, over $100 billion every month pumped into the banks and the economy, right? And then drove down interest rates to almost a minimal level, you know? So driving down interest rates allowed the banks to go ahead and borrow those trillions of dollars I just mentioned, and therefore bypass having to take up the loans offered by Congress and the Fed because they don't need it. They got all these trillions of dollars in loans and borrowing going on. Why take up a loan with government requirements on hiring people or keeping people hired when I can just go ahead and issue some corporate bonds at bottom level rates, very cheap for me, and I don't have to keep people on the payroll. Why don't I do that? And that's exactly what's happened. That's why that over $1 trillion in loans for medium large businesses has not been taken up. You know, interest rates are so low, the Fed has bailed out businesses and banks, pre-bailed them out. You know, they weren't even in trouble before, except for small business, pre-bailed them out, and continues to bail them out. And the pressure has been building on the Fed. You know, why do we have this $600 billion Main Street program for medium-sized businesses and no one's borrowing, you know, your money, the $3.7 trillion sitting there? Why is no one borrowing your money? That's been a criticism of the Fed. Well, the argument is that, oh, Fed, you have your too many stringent rules here for the borrowing, and that's why people aren't borrowing, and you've got to make it easier for people to borrow. What it really means is make it easier. Make it easier by Fed loaning money to insolvent companies. That's what it means, insolvent companies. And the Fed won't do that. And it reaffirmed here this past week that it's not going to do that. It's not going to loan more money out to companies that were probably going to fail and they won't be able to pay it back. Well, that's kind of the Fed's way of putting pressure on Congress to say, hey, we're done, you know? I mean, we'll keep throwing QE in there, but we're not going to go negative interest rates. You know, we're not going to go negative interest rates. And, you know, Congress is going to have to do something. So it's interesting that the Fed has put a stake in the ground here this past week. It says we're not going to carry the recovery because, you know, what we do doesn't have that much effect anymore. You know, we can lower interest rates even lower, not much to go unless it's negative. We can throw more money in QE out there, but it doesn't seem to be stimulating the economy, and it's not. It's not stimulating the economy. So, you know, the Fed has put a stake in the ground and said, okay, Congress, come on, you've got to act. But we know Congress isn't going to act here. So neither fiscal policy is not going to happen to stimulate the economy. As the fourth quarter economy really slows, you know, Goldman Sachs Investment Bank has cut its forecast in half. And some economists are now saying that we're going to have a negative GDP fourth quarter. In other words, a double dip, clearly. Europe's already having a double dip. We're going to have a double dip too, they say. Well, we'll see who's right. What about the stock market? You know, the stock market is booming, isn't it? That's another anomaly here in this particular recession. Now, usually when you have deep depressions like this, you know, the stock markets collapse. You know, back in the 1930s, after the stock market crash, 29, and then, of course, the Great Depression sets in over the next 4 years, by the trough of that Great Depression in 1933, the stock market had declined 89%, the Dow, 89%. It totally collapsed. Well, what's happening now? It's booming, right? It's going up. Well, the way to understand that is to understand that big businesses, particularly the Dow and the NASDAQ, driven heavily by tech companies that are just plowing right through this crisis, are doing quite well. Remember, they got all that money from the Fed. They got $120 billion a month from the Fed. They've got all this money on their balance sheet, these trillions of dollars. And some of these companies, like tech companies, are even more profitable now with people not coming into work in the central location. No facilities costs, right? Let everyone work from home. And what I've heard with some of these tech companies is that, oh, if you're working from home, well, you're living in a different, lower-cost area than the urban area the headquarters is located. So we're going to reduce your pay. Yeah, you don't need as much, you know, if you're living out in a rural area now and working remotely. So they're actually reducing the wages of some folks, some of them. Yeah. So in other words, companies are doing great, and that's why the stock market's rising. And a lot of money is being pumped into the market. You know, a lot of this Fed money doesn't go into real investment. It goes into financial investment and financial asset markets. But the stock markets are also booming, not because they still have all this money on hand, but because now they know, with the results of this election becoming increasingly clear, that there will be no tax cut rollback. Well, what do I mean? Well, Trump passed $4 trillion tax cut in January 2018. He signed off on that. $4 trillion. It's not $1.9 trillion, folks. It was $4 trillion because they didn't count all the big tax cuts for multinational corporations on their offshore operations. And the tax cuts estimate of $1.9 trillion, the official estimate, is based on no recession for 10 years. With a 3% U.S. GDP growth rate. Well, we know there's no growth rate now. We know we're in a recession. You take away those two factors, and you got a $4 trillion tax cut for corporations and investors and businesses and a wealthy 1%. Now, it's pretty clear with a gridlock still going to happen in Congress, in both the House and the Senate. That's not changed. There is no blue wave. In fact, just the opposite. In the House, where the Democrats have lost more seats. Yeah, no blue wave there. And it looks like the Senate's going to be largely unchanged, although we'll see what happens in the Georgia runoff for the senators there. But no tax cut rollback. And the markets see this. They see that Biden's proposal to roll back half of the corporate tax cut only of Trump is now not even that going to happen. You know, under Trump, the corporate tax rate was reduced from 35% to 21%. And Biden's only been proposing raising that halfway to 28%. But even that's not going to happen now. And the stock markets and investors know it, and they're applauding. Hooray! They love this political gridlock now that they got their big tax cut. Yeah. And they know the Fed has to, at some point, throw even more QE and maybe go negative rates. And that will even benefit corporate costs even more, driving down interest rates even further. Although that fight is yet to be won here. The Fed is, as I said, resisting. And they know, the markets know, that the influence of the progressives in a Biden administration is weakened. There will be no Elizabeth Warren at Treasury. There will be no Bernie Sanders at Labor. They know that. And they know it's going to be more bipartisan again. Biden's going to be, you know, resurrecting this worthless bipartisan effort with the Republicans, and in this case, McConnell. Worthless. You know, it was the reason, one of the main reasons why Obama accomplished so little. He kept saying, oh, bipartisan, let's try. You know, extended his hands to Republicans, and the Republican dog bit it every time. Right? And they're going to do it again. And the markets know that McConnell's in an even stronger position than he was before. Right? The markets also know that the China trade war is over. Nothing more is going to happen there. And we're going to see minimal economic programs come out of Biden. Bidenomics is going to be Obamanomics 2.0, I predict. Right? And if McConnell holds on to the Senate majority, Congress can't overturn, won't get the two-thirds vote to overturn a Supreme Court attack on the ACA Obamacare. Well, why do the markets like that? Because the ACA is largely funded by a 6.2, I think, investment tax cut on people earning more than $400,000 income a year. That will be gone. That investment, and therefore the entire thing will be gone. Right? And there will be no public option. No. And insurance companies love that. They're off the hook now. No public option. You see, across the board, investors in stock markets know that this outcome is great for them. And there goes the stock market as a result. It's terrible, terrible for working and middle-class folks and small businesses. But for big capitalists, big corporations, it's perfect. This outcome is perfect. Now we get a repeat of Obama, where the banks and businesses were bailed out right away, but it took 6 years to get jobs back. We get a repeat of that. And we will, if that happens, get a repeat of 2016, I predict. Okay, let's do an election analysis here a little bit. Okay? I would encourage readers or listeners, audience, to go back and read my articles on my blog in the last couple weeks, here last week before the election. Go to jackrasmus.com and read my article, The Senate Confirms Barrett. political instability now is inevitable. That was right before the election, or a week before the election. Then a few days before the election, I wrote, why the record voter turnout may not matter. And then just a day or two ago, I wrote the day after the election. Right? And as far back as July and September, I've been writing, predicting what Trump is going to probably do, which he is doing now. If you want to go further back, read my article there, A Most Dire Warning, where I've pretty much predicted. You know, it wasn't a great insight. If you wouldn't listen to what Trump was saying, you know, you could have inferred easily where he was going with this. You know, the media totally missed it, not surprisingly. But, you know, in the last week, now they're pretty much saying what I was saying weeks and months ago, and other people were saying too. Okay. With the 6-3 majority, Trump really thinks that his appointees are going to bail him out on the Supreme Court. Right? Remember, three of those people on the Supreme Court now, including two of the recent appointees there, Barrett and Kavanaugh, I think the third is Roberts, worked on George W. Bush's attempt to get the Supreme Court to select him as president back in 2000 as a result of the Florida recount vote. The Supreme Court stopped that vote and gave Bush the presidency. And Gore, of course, did not fight it, went along with it. After all, they're all elites, you know, they don't want to mess up their system. It works for both of them because they switch on and off, you see. They take turns. So they don't want to mess that system up. So Gore didn't do anything about the Florida recount. Let the Supreme Court select George W. Bush. Three of Bush's lawyers who were arguing on his behalf before the Supreme Court to get it to make that move were Kavanaugh, Barrett, and I think it was Roberts, maybe Gorsuch, but I think it was Roberts. Three of them. Now, Trump knows that, and Trump thinks, I'm sure, hey, you know, in the last ditch, you know, I can get the Supreme Court to overturn the election in maybe Pennsylvania, right? Or maybe Nevada, or maybe Georgia. Well, you focus on Georgia and Pennsylvania for sure. Very, very narrow victories there. Mm-hmm. So just a little bit of historical context. And Trump has said he's going to go to the Supreme Court, and he's going to go. Question is which state and which claim and whatever. Now, why didn't he go earlier, you might say? Well, I think Trump actually believed he won. He won on Tuesday night. And, you know, if you count the show-up votes, ballots, he did get a big lead. But, of course, you know, we have tens of millions of mail-in ballots just being counted now. You know, a CNN poll before the elections indicated that 55% of the Democrats, or maybe more it was, it was 66, I'm not sure, were going to vote by mail because of COVID. And only 21% of Republicans were going to vote by mail. And the show-up day votes were just the opposite in percentage terms. So, you know, the direct votes were going to be counted very quickly in states like Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, but they would eventually be swamped by the counting of the mail-in ballots. Why didn't he challenge it earlier? Well, because it looked like he was winning. You know, I mean, he would look pretty silly if he went ahead and challenged where he was in such a big lead, right? So he was caught a little bit by the situation. Mm-hmm. Hard to challenge when you're in the lead, right? But in some ways, it's harder to challenge now, late in the game, you see. But he'll find ways of doing it. If you listen to his big crybaby speech here, I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday, where he outlined a litany of different charges of improprieties, even fraud claims going on in the election in so many places. You know, you got a list of the political spaghetti he's thrown up against the wall, right? You can see what sticks. He's going to try it all. But ultimately, you know, he's going to go to the Supreme Court. Right? We'll see how that that turns out. He's got other moves, which I'm going to talk about shortly as well. But first, I want to bring to everyone's attention that the 2020 election here hasn't changed very much from 2016, has it? No, think about it. In 2016, you had three northern swing states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, that by very small margins went for Trump, largely because Hillary did not bother to even go to those states, thinking she had it in their pocket because they always were Democrat states. But, you know, the Democrats shot themselves in the foot in those states a long time ago, starting with Bill Clinton, by pushing free trade and NAFTA and doing nothing about the exodus of union, good jobs, union jobs, the decline, collapse of unions and manufacturing and the good union jobs in all those states. Those states had always been firmly Democrat because of unionization and industrial union jobs. Well, they destroyed their own base with free trade. That's simple. You know, and then George W. Bush exacerbated, and Obama exacerbated the trend even more. So those people, a lot of them, a segment of them, working class up there in those states, you know, abandoned the Democrats here in 2016. Now, Trump promised he'd bring jobs back there, which he hasn't done. A good example is Foxconn, you know, that makes Apple phones. Big hullabaloo there. They bring in Foxconn in Wisconsin, right? And they're going to create thousands of jobs, 5,000 jobs, and so forth. You know how many jobs they created at Foxconn? 300. It's a warehouse. That's all it is. Yeah. You know, people see this. You know, where are the jobs 4 years later? Where are the jobs? He said he was going to reform NAFTA. Nah, he just tweaked it here and there. Nothing's been changed in NAFTA. Very little. Both sides playing a game here. Nothing's been changed in NAFTA. And finally, you know, the voters, enough of them have swung back to the Democrats here, who actually showed up a little bit. You know? That's the main change from 2016. Now, there's a couple other changes that occurred from 2016. And one is, it looks like, although it may be reversed, it looks like Arizona's going to flip and go Biden. That's because of the Latino vote. Come on, Nevada and Arizona, the shift there is because of the Latino vote. That's simple. Latinos, you know, will put Biden, even though he did not pay enough attention to them, in office, probably. And the other, of course, is Georgia. What's going on in Georgia? Well, you know, the grassroots have been mobilized in Georgia. Stacey Adams, who was stolen, whose election for governor was stolen, you know, by the Republicans there a year or so ago, right? They have a real grass organizing effort going on there. Get out the vote and so forth. And that's made the difference. You know, Atlanta and other urban areas there has made the difference in Georgia and has allowed Biden to squeak by. Grassroots mobilization, right? Where Bernie Sanders could not mobilize the youth and the grassroots in the South, right? Stacey Abrams has been able to do that, at least in one state. So it's grassroots support. The Latinos in Arizona and Nevada, and blacks and others mobilizing in Georgia, that is really making the difference in this election. You know, plus Trump's failure to deliver for the swing states. That's the election. That's the election, and why Biden is squeaking by, and we'll win now very clearly, right? Okay, so the election looks very much like 2016, this time, reflecting the deep divisions in this country, except for mobilizations in the Southwest and in Georgia. It hasn't changed, hasn't changed, right? You know, the Democrats, Pelosi, Schumer, thought, well, there's going to be a blue wave, right? A blue wave. You know, there's no blue wave, which means that whole strategy introduced in the midterms of 2018 by Pelosi, which was let's focus on the suburban vote and women and focus on veterans, right? We'll run veterans and we'll run professionals and we'll even run political moderates, you know, Republican types wearing a Democrat hat, and that's what will win, right? Well, they were able to get, you know, some marginal House districts in 2018, but I wrote in November 2018, go back and read it, I think the piece was called Hasn't. It hasn't won this year. In fact, Democrats lost votes, lost seats in the House. Right? Certainly haven't turned the Senate. If they win the Senate, it will be because of the mobilization from the grassroots in Georgia. Because now we're going to have a runoff of the two Senate races in Georgia. Watch the focus there. Watch the money plow in there. And, you know, the Democrats pissed away a lot of money, you know, trying to unseat McConnell in Kentucky. Come on. Or the record spending to unseat Lindsey Graham in North Carolina. Come on. Just imagine if they had thrown that money into Georgia, what the situation might be today. Yeah. The strategy of Democrats has not been all that impressive, neither in the Senate or in the House. All right? Let's look at what's happened since Tuesday. Trump, Tuesday night, comes out and says, I won, I won. A couple of nights later, he comes out. I was robbed. This is stolen. This is fraud. I'm going to Supreme Court, right? Initiates challenges in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, right? A double standard. Because in Nevada and Arizona, he's saying, oh, we got to count all the votes, you know? But in Pennsylvania, he said, no, we can't count all the votes. Let's stop the vote, you know? In recent days, particularly today, we're seeing some cracks in Republican Party support for him. Not very big, but some. You know, Romney, he's sort of testing the waters. You know, Santorum, former Republican senator from Pennsylvania, who's a talking head on CNN, came out with a blistering critique of Trump's second latest a TV appearance here, saying they're all against me. It's all rigged, right? Yeah, and a litany of minor claims he threw out up against the wall there, Trump did, right? But there's some stirrings here. You know, McConnell has not come out pro-Trump saying, oh, we'll count the votes. And there's some talk that maybe the ex-presidents, Bush, together with Clinton and Obama, will get together and say, come on, Donald, leave. We'll see. But there is some stirrings at the grassroots by Trump and his followers attempt to assault some state counting locations. You know, I think it's in Arizona, maybe in Nevada, but Pennsylvania and so forth, right? Trump threatens to arrest demonstrators if they go out and protest and demonstrate. Yeah. Question is, will he call out the Proud Boys to physically defend him and challenge protesters in the streets? We will see. But the protesters so far, you know, haven't gone into the streets because it's not really clear what's going on in the vote. If it makes it clear he's going to try to overturn this, then you'll see people in the streets. But there's a plan B he's got. There's a plan B. What is that? What's his plan B? Well, if he doesn't win Electoral College votes, and it doesn't appear he's going to now, right? There's talk, rumblings going on, that Trump will try to get Republican state governors and legislatures, in other words, in the state where the governor and legislature are Republican, to refuse to submit their electors who might have voted for Biden, refuse to allow them to vote for Biden, because, you know, Electoral College actually in December shows up and casts the vote that determines the president. So he's going to try to get those state Republican state legislatures to rule that their electors cannot cast their vote Yeah, that's a backup to the backup. You see, the Electoral College is a backup to thwart the popular vote. Well, there's a backup to the backup, and I just described it. Throw it into the House of Representatives, another tactic, and let the House vote to determine the president. You see, that's a backup to the backup to the backup. Well, wait a minute. Don't the Democrats have a majority in the House? In terms of total representatives, yes, but the way the rule works is if the election is thrown into the House of Representatives, then the states vote, one vote per state. And there are 26 red states and 23 blue states. So you could have a state by state in the House vote, and it would give Trump the election today, simply because Republican state legislatures would do that. Or they simply may disallow their electors who might have voted for Trump to actually cast a vote for Trump when the Electoral College meets. Or they may do both of those. I mean, it really is a sad picture, isn't it, for democracy, how it really works in America. There are so many ways they got to thwart the will of the people, right? And Trump is not beyond using every one of them. Right. At the same time, he'll accelerate his challenges to the Supreme Court. Right? Okay. The latest electoral picture here for Friday afternoon is Trump is closing the gap to some extent in Arizona, but they're still like 40,000 plus votes away. But there's a lot of votes to count there. He's got definitely North Carolina. That's 16 votes, 11 votes in Arizona. He only has 214 votes. That won't get him anywhere near 270. Trump has got to win Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Georgia, where you have 44 votes combined. And clearly, Biden is in the lead and expanding his lead. Biden probably will come out today or tomorrow and declare himself the winner, or certainly forewarned once again about Trump's efforts to steal the election, right? But it's clear Pelosi's strategy has failed, lost seats in the House here. This suburban women vets professionals focus, as I warned against last time, has failed. Clearly, the Senate has failed. Democrats' policies failed. It's 48-48, although, maybe the people in Georgia can pull it out with their grassroots organizing. We'll see, right? Okay. McConnell is not going to move on the stimulus. That's a failure. Trump will probably play scorched earth. That's a failure, right? But the pundits are perplexed. Let me finish on this. The pundits, media pundits are perplexed. They're saying, why, given this deep recession, why, given the problems with COVID, that we still have 68, 69 million people voting for Trump? They don't understand this. They're perplexed. Well, let me give an explanation on what I believe is going on and why you still got 68, 69 million for Trump, who will continue to be for Trump or Trump's successor after this election. Trump is a movement, not a crazy individual, simply. And that's not going away. And that's the deep, deep divisions in this country that everyone's aware of now. That's been going on since 1994 when Newt Gingrich, and his radicals captured the House of Representatives. And it's been deepening. And in correlation, American democracy has been atrophying ever since under Trump. It's accelerated, of course. But, why 68, 69 million people still vote for Trump? Well, I'm going to argue that the recession has had relatively much less impact in Trump's base and the red states. Everybody got the stimulus, whether you're in red or blue states, in March, April. And then the red states opened up by early May. They didn't have a shutdown that long, and they opened up in early May. So they got the benefit of the stimulus and early May, and you see savings rates go way up at that time. And they've been doing well based on that. Plus, remember, as I said earlier, over $70 billion in farm payment subsidies provided by Trump over the last year. economically, they just haven't been hurting as much as the blue states have been hurting, and the big urban centers have been hurting, where you have most of the services and the crash going on in terms of jobs. COVID, less relative impact in the red states until just recently. Yes, you know, it was first the East Coast, then the West Coast, right? Yeah, you had a little outbreak here and there in Louisiana and Florida, but you didn't have until last month this big impact in the Midwest, Wisconsin, and all these areas in terms of COVID, right? So COVID has not had as relative great impact economically and, you know, health-wise even, as it has in the blue states. And that's reflected in the continuing support for Trump, as well as the less economic impact. But the most important factor, I think, is that, as I've said before, white America, white European heritage America, which is heavily concentrated in, you know, the Midwest and the South, you know, in the rural areas, in the small towns, among small businesses in rural, non-rural, exurb, small town, that's Trump's base, Farmbeck, right? They are fearful that they see their America, where they've been dominant and their culture has been dominant, is now under challenge and may soon disappear. It's a culture fear, not just jobs, but a fear of loss of control of government and a fear for the future. In other words, it's racist. It's racism behind the immigration fight of Trump, right? And it's racist Trump you know, denying African Americans and Muslim Americans and so forth. It's racism, white nationalism, and white base, right? Rural, small town base for Trump. They see Trump as the bulwark against this demographic cultural shift that is occurring and inevitable in an increasingly diverse USA. They fear it, and they see him as the bulwark against that. That's why they don't care what he says or does, you see. As long as he stands between them and this change, they're for him. And it's not going to go away. It's not going to go away. Bidenomics, right, is going to be Obamanomics 2.0, and I predict if that's what it is, a weak recovery, and in 2022, it will shift back again. In other words, they will lose those seats in the House and Senate once again. And I see that's what's happening. As we get a W-shaped recovery here, clearly, the negative COVID effect will increase. We won't have a stimulus. We have more political instability. Fourth quarter is going to be much, much worse than the third quarter. And we may even have financial instability if this slow growth continues for some time. Politically, right, expect Trump to mess his way in the middle of the political street here for the next 75 days. And political instability wild card. A lot will depend on what happens in Georgia, not just in the presidential election, but the Senate election. And it'll be a close election nonetheless in terms of Electoral College, if we even rely on Electoral College, if Trump does. We'll see. Trump still has cards to play, and he's going to play them with the Supreme Court. He's going to play them with the Republican state legislatures and Electoral College. And he may even play it by calling his people out in the street to challenge protesters. We will see. Don't underestimate what this guy will do because his ego will not allow him to simply leave as a normal human being. Political instability is still on the agenda, and increasing economic and COVID instability as well. America's triple crisis is not going away. Okay, that's it. I'm out of here today. They're hard and sit where-